Good afternoon. Well, we definitely have some overlap from our previous school board meetings here, so I'm planning to trim some, but I have some, in the description of this meeting today, it talks about what are the components of a culture of healthy communication. And that's what I want to talk about today. The school culture makes a big difference. And communication is something I am weak in. It's ironic they picked me for this subject. Just ask my wife. She often reminds me that I need to communicate better. And so I was given this project spring or early summer, and I listened to some books, mainly one book on communication. And so I want to separate it here. And I know it in this setting, communication is more nuanced, I guess. And I want to talk about communication first a little bit. Then I want to talk about culture. And then I want to spend at least half the time here today talking about how our schools, I want you to be able to ask each other questions. Does anybody's school here do this? Does anybody do that? I want to see if we can learn in a collaborative way, learn anything. How many different schools are here represented here today? So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, 6 with me. Okay, so on communication, I am just, you know, John talked about it this morning. I don't know if you were here for that one. He had some good thoughts on communication. And so these are just general things about communication that I found interesting. And these are things that I plan to, I have been thinking about communicating. Well, obviously my wife keeps reminding me. And so I have been over the last few years. And I guess since I listened to the book on communicating, it was more for public speaking and how to keep people's attention. And so it doesn't really apply to a school board, but yet it does. It does in a way. So I found these things interesting. These are just a few of the things that are interesting. And then I have some quotes for each of these. Quotes that people have said that, I don't know, they're a pithy saying. They just explain exactly. And I thought they were applied well. So one thing when you're speaking and you want people to understand what you're saying and you want people to believe what you're saying is especially when you're talking about a school board, you're talking to a parent who you're talking about their child. Behavioral issue or struggling in school or schoolwork or whatever it is credibility. And that is something that needs to be lived out. That's not something that you can convince people of. You need to have this credibility before you talk to them. Nothing is easier than saying words, and nothing is harder than living them. Good work must be stored up before it shows up. Consistency compounds, so does credibility. What you are stands over you and thunders so loudly that I cannot hear what you say otherwise. Your most effective message is the one that you live. And so this is a part of it that it's not something that you can just suddenly fix. Like, this is the way you live. This is the way. And if you have that, it goes a long way with communicating. Then what you say matters more. If you have that kind of credibility with the person you are talking to in the hard conversations. Let's see, what's another one here? Another help for speaking is, and this here would apply more to school devotions or, you know, teaching, preaching. Law of observation. So observing other people, observing how people work, observing how people speak, you know, effective speakers. Why do you listen to who you listen to? Why do you enjoy a sermon? What about that speaker? How does he keep your attention? Why do you, if you see another book written by this author, why are you quick to listen to it? Like, what, or read it? Warren Buffett said, much of what you become in life depends on whom you choose to admire and copy. This book also was a book that he was making points to stretch us. And the one thing he said was, if you're at the head of the class, you're in the wrong class. And do you view that? You know, it is so easy to get snowed under when you don't know what to do. Or do you look at it as a challenge? Like, okay, who might have went through this? Who could I call? Who could I talk to? Where can I learn about this? What is your first response? Preparation. Of course, we know that's an important part of speaking. There's a few good sayings here. Winston Churchill once commented on a rival by saying, he can be described as one of those orators who, before he gets up, doesn't know what he's going to say. When he is speaking, does not know what he is saying. And when he has sat down, doesn't know what he has said. One interesting thing to me, these, you know, Winston Churchill and Reagan, and you have a lot of people that have had, I don't know, quite profound statements they've made over history. And they all took this thing of public speaking very seriously. When they talk about speaking for 10 minutes, I forget which one of them said, but he prepares for it's a week to speak for 10 minutes. So it's not accident is the point I'm trying to make. Preparation, if you prepare, you can get better. Doesn't matter where you're at. Doesn't matter where you start out. You can do better. I can do better. You cannot speak that which you do not know. You cannot share that which you do not feel. You cannot translate that which you do not have. You cannot give that which you do not possess. If you wing it, success is improbable. If you work for it, success is inevitable. The wing in it, I liked how he said success is improbable. You know, sometimes it works. Sometimes I've winged it and it worked. Most times it doesn't. And so when you're going to have that meeting, obviously seeking God's face and praying about it is the first thing, but prepare for it. Prepare for the school board meetings. When we're going to discuss a subject, do the research, prepare for it. Come there with something to say, even if it's only 3 minutes of what you actually have to say. But don't show up and say, oh man, I forgot about that. Or I guess the other thing you could do is wing it. Talk about a lot of stuff you don't know about. Connecting is another thing that is very important with communicating. So especially if we're dealing with if we have to go to a parent, we have to go to a teacher, we have to address something, that we tend to tense up. We tend to go off of our precedents. This is the way we deal with this. We don't connect with them. And we maybe at times don't feel like we need to. We're maintaining what we have, what we've decided. Connecting with people... This, you know, I'm sure you've thought of it. If you have school devotions, how can you have a devotional that connects with 10th grade, 5th grade, 1st grade? You got to be going back and forth really quick with the depth of your story and also. To be able to explain something simply, so to use simplicity. C.S. Lewis said, if you cannot translate your thoughts into uneducated language, then your thoughts were confused. And that's a good thing for us to put in our pocket. For all our theology discussions and for the rest of life as well. And it takes time. It takes time to boil something down and condense it and to actually simplify it in a way that's easier to understand, that's easy to understand. We're talking about communication. The least helpful thing is that if they don't understand. There's another thing that they brought out is the law of visual. Show and tell is better than just tell. Use pictures and stuff whenever you can. And when I read that, I had a picture came to mind. And it's the picture with Never Give Up. I remember it's the picture of the bird swallowing a frog, and the frog has the bird by the neck holding on so he can't swallow. I remember the first time I saw this, I was 10 or 12 years old, probably, at a little drugstore, and it was a card, probably a get well card or something. But that picture, never give up, you know, is worth many words. And when you're communicating, especially helpful for children, for teaching. If you can use a picture or pictures or object lesson to one thing that Jesus did is he did a lot of storytelling, and he lots of people followed him and listened. Like the children even were listening to the stories. They were stories. And so when you're thinking to communicate some, work that in too, to drive a point home. Another thing you can use is humor. Because laughter helps people relax a little bit. Sometimes you can talk about things that are a little hard to talk about, but and you can still get people to think about it. You can broach the subject and use it as a way of getting people to think about it without maybe hurt feelings or I don't know. So those were the things that I had, that I liked in my dive into communication. And when you're talking about what this subject is today, I think it's mostly in school culture. It's mostly in how the school board operates, makes decisions, all of those things, I think, is actually what leads us to the difficulties with our communication. And it's not actually communication that's the problem. And so, how many of you have heard of the book The Outward Mindset? You read it? How many of you have read it? Listen to it. It's a very engaging book. I recommend it if you have the chance to read that or listen to it. The Outward Mindset by the Arbinger Institute. I listened to this book. I don't listen to books casually. I don't read books much. My business, my work, my occupation, I use my mind a lot. So I don't relax with reading. And my wife reads and listens to a lot of things. So I listened to it by accident. She told me, this book is a must read. And I went to mow the churchyard, and so I thought, well, this is the one. So I listened to it, and it was the wrong one. But I really enjoyed it. So what the idea is, and this is actually Jesus' idea. This is not, like, this book is not written from a Christian perspective. But Jesus, when he taught us, the Old Testament and the New Testament, to love our neighbor as ourselves, to focus on other people. If we did that, if we actually pulled it off, you know, to the detail that you do for yourself. Like, I like my coffee hot and black. Maybe you don't like coffee. Or maybe you like it with cream. Maybe you like it iced. But just think about it. If you paid that kind of detail to making sure somebody else was happy, everybody around you was having a successful day, that you got it just the right way for them. And you made it happen. You actually looked out for them and made sure that they, you know, think about how we like to be heard. We like to be respected. When we need to make adjustments, we like when people work on us gently. We like when people feel we are worthwhile to spend time with. We like when people value or recognize the effort we invest in a project. You know, we're all humans. We're all similar enough that there are other people that just like us would enjoy whatever it is. And so, let's see here. This idea of the outward mindset is focusing on how we are, the response is how can we help? That is the response. How can we help? How can I help? We talked about a bully in school. How can we help? What could we do? What could we do differently? Why is this child? We ask all those questions, but we're looking at it from the aspect of we're trying to help. What can we do? So when we go to the parent, we ask that question. How can we help? What can we do? Like, we have this. This is a problem. And the one example I thought of in the game of basketball, a team can choose to play hero ball, where the best players are the ones that make the plays happen. Or but in that case, when you play hero ball, there's usually a problem, and that problem is keeping the rest of the players engaged in the game. The role players or whatever. And that's on defense, that's on offense. It's hard to keep everybody engaged in the game. Or you can play team basketball, where everybody is involved in everything. The team that plays team basketball will be able to accomplish more than their talents add up to. You can have, what do they call them? All-stars, superstars. You can have superstar players. If they don't play together well and they're not playing for each other, their talent is up here, and another team that plays together well can win. And if we would apply that to this with working with people, if we as a team help each other reach our potential, if we just look at your fellow school board members. Think of their weakness. They got any weaknesses? Think of their strengths. Do they have any? Help them. Encourage them. If they got a strength, say, why don't you lead out on this? Like, why don't you work on this? So in this book, I'm going to tell you a story. It's about a debt collection company who took this idea that they were going to operate differently. They were going to keep the person they were collecting debt from in mind, their best in mind. Name of the company is CFS2, based in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Okay. So when the company started, they sat down and they thought through this. They said, well, how can we help these people out? Like, we need to put their shoes on and, you know, think like what they're in. They said, well, okay, so we're going with they started out with the assumption that these people obviously have a debt they can't pay. For some reason, they can't pay it. So when they called these people up, they were given the contact information, the debt to collect on. They said, how can we help you? You know, you have this debt here. They said, if they would say, well, we lost our job, this is what this company did if someone lost their job. They'd help them write out a resume of their previous work. They would search for job openings in their area. They would help line up interviews for these job openings. They would give them a courtesy call the morning of the job interview. Say, you have this job interview at 10:15. They would do it early enough to make sure that they would be able to get there. This is a debt collecting company, and this is what they were doing. The owner of the CEO of it did not pay his people that were working for him by how much debt they collected, but instead he paid them by how many services they were able to help these people with. They were able to help them write a resume. They were able to get them into some kind of housing. They were able to. This is how the people got paid. In the debt collection business, it was hard to keep workers, is another aspect of this. Because usually they're training their workers how to be hard-nosed, calling these high-pressure calls all day long. Nobody liked it. Nobody felt successful. But this company, was quite successful. And the employee morale was high. They felt good about what they were doing. They were helping people out. And this debt collection company recovered twice as much of the debt as their closest competing companies. All because they put the person who they were talking to as the focus of how to help them. So if we as a school board, I can only go into a school board with that focus myself. I can try to share it and get the rest of the school board on board with that. But if our focus really is on helping that struggling student with behavioral issues, whatever the scenario is, and we have that credibility that we talked about, and our goal is to help. How can we help? What can we do? And we brainstorm rather than go back to how we've dealt with this before, maybe. Are we open-minded enough to try something different? So along with this, that's one thing that this company, the book brought out, was collaboration. When you have a school board meeting and a teacher brings something up, teacher says, hey, I have this thing that I'm dealing with. It's been going on here for a couple months. I've tried this and I've tried that. And what do you guys have any ideas for me? The first question I ask is, well, what do you think you should do to the teacher that asked the question? Because they probably have another idea or two, but they're unsure of themselves. Then we can ask the teachers, especially if we have some teachers with experience or school board members with a lot of teaching experience. Well, what are the ideas? And as the ideas come out, the teacher gives an idea. This teacher over here thinks of another one. Because they just heard this idea, they build on it. And this teacher has another one. And so this function of idea sharing is actually spawning new thoughts, new ideas, new creative ways of being able to, what should be done. And so you do this in the school board meeting for 5 minutes, and it depends on the teacher. Some teachers want the answer, like, what should I do? Some teachers, if they've taught a while, all they really wanted was a couple suggestions. And so at that point, you can say, well, did you hear enough ideas for this, the ways to try to address this? And the teacher may say, no, I'd like more specifics. The teacher may say, yeah, this is good. I'll try a few of these ideas this next month or till the next board meeting. I've been a chairman long enough to know I'm not now this year. But how do you condense what was said in that meeting? If the teacher wasn't there in that meeting and it was the school board and the principal brainstorming and you had all this stuff going on and the pros and the cons of this versus that, how do you give a summary to this teacher? Like, how do you go back to it? So the point I'm trying to make, if you have this built into your decision-making process where you can take care of as much of it as you can on this level, the teacher was there. The teacher heard the pros and cons, heard the ideas, probably already marked two of them off the list in her mind before we even left the meeting because she thought they were a terrible idea. But nevertheless, the point I'm making is it's a communicative way of dealing with these things. It's done. A saying. I wonder if I have it here. Woodrow Wilson once said, we need to use all the brains we have and all the brains we can borrow. So looking at that collaborative way, he was the president. First World War started there. But that was his way of looking at it. This one writer said, whenever I share my thoughts with a good group of thinkers, they come up with ideas I never would have. If we press into that and realize that collaboration, if we do it as a team, is going to be there it is. Groups are often smarter than the smartest people in them. This is what CEOs do. This is what Jeff Bezos with Amazon. He had small meetings with his people. But if you realize that you don't have the answers, I guess if you think you do, you're not going to have all the right answers. Just statistically, you're not. I mean, not all the best ones. And so I see this. I've been in school board meetings and where it wasn't appropriate to have an open discussion like this. I can't even remember what the topic was, but it wasn't appropriate to have the teachers in there. It's probably something to do with the teacher. So we did it. We did it, and we did it just as a school board. We dismissed the teachers first. And to come up with a summary and to communicate well with what the decision was or what was involved in the decision was so hard. And so as much of the problems that we can solve by collaborating on that level, the less need for communication, great communication, in those scenarios. Okay, I would like to spend time here on the rest of what this is supposed to be. You know, what how do you get teachers to communicate? How do you get the teachers to tell you what's actually they're actually working on? What questions do you ask? Is it over supper, the school board meeting, after school?
One of the things that pops into my head, just as a general rule, is in order for me to share something with you, or a teacher, maybe a lady teacher sharing with a bunch of men looking at it, she has to, or he, whoever it is, we have to be comfortable with each other to a certain degree. So if we walk into a meeting and everybody's kind of tense, nobody cracks a joke, or there's nothing really to break the ice or whatever you need to get somebody who hasn't thought of your community before, you're not going to get much out of a teacher that's not comfortable talking. So one of the things is to somehow create an atmosphere of comfort that it's okay to say whatever you need to say. Now that's probably a whole other 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just something that came to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Comfortable.
Do any of you, the rest of you, agree with that? Have you found that to be? Okay, and it depends on the person with where they're comfortable. So you have to find that. That's your job. Just like if you're married here today, it's your job to love your wife and for her to feel loved. So it's your job to get to that place, wherever it is, where they'll communicate freely and they feel able to. Most girls, in my experience, they do not communicate well in the school board meeting. We ask them to give a 5-minute summary of the past month, but it's going good. pretty normal. Then you get them into that place where, well, yeah, this one's struggling, all his grades are a little low, and failed a test and had to do the second one. And okay, how often do you guys have school board meetings? Do you guys have any questions? Let's back up. What are your questions? Do you have a question you'd like to have answered or that you'd like to know about other people's schools? We have school board meetings once a month. Is everybody else here? Do you have a printed, like an agenda before each one? Okay, we have one hand. Anybody else?
Two?
Okay, we have 2.5. Okay, what are some other thoughts? Other questions? One question I have, do you have I know in the business world sometimes they'll have an anti-gossip policy or something where you don't talk with other teachers about other teachers unless you're, you don't do that. You only talk to the school board if you have a problem. Anybody ever done anything like that? Is the teacher supposed to address that before they take that? Like, is there a step before talking to the administrator?
In which situation?
Like with a behavioral issue.
So if they have an issue that they can't remedy.
Yeah.
Themselves.
So, but they would be expected to try it. Okay. Yeah. Time's up. You have any more questions? Hey, any more?
I just want to say, as a teacher, probably some of the most perplexing times for me was when the board made a judgment call, as Conrad was talking about. But they were missing some segment of information, and they come back and give the whatever, deliver the decision, and then you say, well,
Yeah, you know, that goes both ways. If we don't, if we're not told, you know, the information, you know, at some point there has to be communication both ways. And that's where, you know, the credibility really does come in. If the teachers know that you care and that you want to know, well, then they'll be freer to tell you. And they know you're not going to do anything crazy, I guess. That's another thing. It depends on the teacher. You know, if you've taught for a long time and you have school board members that have never taught, school board members can decide to do interesting things. Have been known to. I find it kind of hard to. I've been frustrated a time or two, Jonathan, on that point. Anything more?